What's up? Monday night live. Here we are in the place to be. How you doing, ladies and gentlemen? Let me get this light so it's a bit brighter for you guys. Got my Biggie Small shirt on tonight. How you all doing? Drop in the chat. Let me know where you're tuning in from. It's been a long weekend here in Perth, which has been good for some of us. Well, actually, not for many of us, to be honest, because we've been in lockdown. We were put in lockdown on Friday. I got a message at my 2 p.m. meeting was cancelled, and we've been in lockdown, well, wearing masks at least, and cafes and restaurants been closed for 3 days at this stage. I believe I may have heard some news that we're back out of lockdown at midnight tonight. Hey, Amelia, welcome to Monday Night Live. Did you have a good weekend? I'm about to tell you what an exciting weekend I had. Well, a few other things going on outside of work, moving house and so on, but social media marketing awards submission date was on Friday, and I've been a bit ambitious. I've decided to enter 7 different categories this year. If you didn't know, I didn't hear me celebrating for the last 2 years. Winning Best Use of LinkedIn in 2019 was that absolute, I was just thrilled and shocked, to be honest. We're going in with no advertising spend to be able to win was an honor. And this series, it's a little bit different to some of the ones out there where, you know, you get a vote and you send it to all your network and the most votes wins. This is, the panel of judges are from, they've got executives from Spotify, Facebook, Snapchat, all these big companies which are obviously extremely proficient in social media marketing. So to be able to be recognised for them, for the LinkedIn categories, pretty thrilling. And you think to yourself, in, you know, 2019, I didn't even have an acceptance speech. I get up to the... when I get my award, I didn't know what to say. I was like, I'd like to thank my mum. I brought my mum with me. 2020, we had the gala dinner remotely, so we were, we're still dressed up. I was wearing shorts, but with a blazer. And LinkedIn versus Instagram was also in the finals for best use of LinkedIn. So Brooke Vilinovich came around, and we had some wines. She's pregnant, so she didn't. But it's a big thing, and there's lots of marketers around the country tuning in for this live thing. And again, 2020 won best use of LinkedIn, which. So I'm starting to wonder if it's actually a fluke or what, but I've gone in hard this year for 2021, and I've gone in for a few other categories as well, like YouTube, Social Media Marketer of the Year, Social Media Educator of the Year. So I decided to put a lot of work into the submissions. I think it's really important, like, to verify the results, and I've had a lot of support from my clients and guys like the Social Media College, Jonathan Tanner, really supportive. I appreciate, you contributing towards my submission. It's been great. And a shout out to the Social Media Marketing Institute that started this whole initiative. They're really taking our industry to another level. Things like accreditation and awards help people who are looking for service providers to navigate, like, who's good and who's a cowboy, because we've all lost money with marketers, even me. So it's the nature of an immature industry. When the industry is immature and there's not much regulation, a lot of cowboys go into it. The thing with social media is most businesses, if they're looking for a solution, they don't know a whole lot about it. So you can know enough about search engine optimization to be dangerous. You know, it's very easy to look at somebody's website and go, oh, your inquiry form's in the wrong place. No wonder you need a new website. Or, geez, you haven't put a header tag in. You know, it's very easy to point out mistakes and then people perceive you as an expert. Being able to deliver a result is something different. By the way, be careful about these guarantees, by the way. Like, I know I've offered this 100 lead in 100 day guarantee, but, like, I don't offer it to everyone. It's a business. I've got to, like, the business that comes through, I've got to look at it and go, how confident am I that I can deliver for this business before I offer it? Otherwise, it'd be crazy. But, I mean, unless, like, I had all these, like, little, like, a lead is just a connection, or a lead is somebody that knows your name. Whereas, in SEO, they're like, oh, we'll get you top of Google. Business owners are so proud. They're like, my SEO company guarantees they'll get me to the top of Google. And you, if then someone says that to you, just ask them and say, "Oh yeah, that's interesting. What keyword are they going to get you to the top of Google for?" "Oh, my for my company, for what I do, for my company." "Oh, so for your company name, you're going to be at the top of Google." "Great. How many people competing for your company name?" Unless your company name's like Buy T-Shirts Perth or something, there's not going to be much competition, mate. It's easy to get to the top of Google. You probably were already there. You know, it's because obviously there's different rankings for different keywords. It's actually quite easy to get a website to the top of Google for one keyword. A lot of companies have like 40 different websites targeting different. Anyway, I'm digressing. I like it. I like this whole internet marketing stuff. Now, you, if you've seen the promotion for tonight's live, you would see that we have a representative from LinkedIn joining us. He's over in Toronto, and he writes for the sales blog. How good does Biggie look, by the way? I love it when he creeps up on the screen like that. I haven't worn a T-shirt in a while. So he writes for the sales blog. He's part of their sales solution division. And I saw some of the articles he wrote about virtual selling. Excuse me, I'm just having a red wine. By the way, it is 6:06 p.m. in Perth. For those of you tuning in England and America, I'm not drinking at 6 a.m. Where was I? Yeah, so I liked what he was saying in his articles. And so I asked him to come on. And I hopped on. I normally tell guests to come on 15 minutes before for a sound check, to make sure that there's no interruptions. And he wasn't showing up. And then I checked my email 3 minutes ago, and he said he's got an emergency and he can't make it. So sorry about that, guys, but he's going to have to tune in another time. But that's okay, because I think what we should do, I want to talk a little bit about virtual selling anyway, because I've been sort of thinking about this a lot, but it's also an opportunity for you guys to ask me questions. We don't get an opportunity to do that very often, particularly when there's guests on and so on. I've got my eye on the chat. I can see all of your comments coming through. Hi, Amber. Joining on Facebook. Facebook is the preference for Amber. And we've got the Saint David St. Martin. Doubling, tripling, and quadrupling down, my friend. Yeah, well, you got to. People are just going to think, you know, well, it's a one once. Fluke, one twice, you know, got lucky. Run three times. You can't say too much after three times. Hey, Chris, how are you, mate? Tuning in from Facebook as well. Lovely photograph there with his bride. Who else have we got on the call? Who's on YouTube? I know you YouTubers are probably laying on the couch, aren't you? Yeah. You're not commenting because you're laying on the couch watching on TV. I'm entering in the YouTube category as well, which I'm super excited about. Like, I don't know if you guys follow me on YouTube, but YouTube's gone bananas in the last year. I've had 750,000 views on my videos. Crazy, absolutely crazy. So like 850,000 since I started 10 years ago. So like in the last year, it's just gone bananas. It's not just luck. Like I started looking at the analytics and like going, oh, that's interesting. That video gets more subscribers than that one. And it's like, and then you watch the average view duration and you're like, oh, you know, it's dropping off. Oh, there it stays still and then drops off again. And so if you post like an hour long talk, you notice like between 20 minutes and 40 minutes, no one's dropping off. You go, that must be really good content in there. And so I chop that bit out and then I post it again as a different video. And does really, like, it's great, the analytics. Average view duration is everything on YouTube because they look at how long people watch your videos for. I'm fascinated by it. There's so much that goes into it. I'm going to get some coaching from Roberto Blake in the US. He seems to know what's going on. Roberto Blake, what a legend. And I tuned into VidSummit, got a virtual access to VidSummit. It was a couple hundred bucks or something. Well worth it. That was amazing. So let's talk about virtual selling. And while I'm doing this, drop your questions in the chat. You can ask me about literally anything from business to marketing. Why did I move my computer, guys? Tell me why. Had everything going smoothly, and I decided to move my computer. I've ordered a desktop so that there's no more interference with cameras. I got one with a really strong battery, and I got more red wine to deal with things like this. All right, so I'm going to start with sales. Does anybody want to learn more about how to sell virtually? Cool, because, well, I say cool. I'm assuming you're all going, yes. This is the interesting thing about virtual selling, right? It's convenient. But a lot of us salespeople, myself included, don't like it because we feel like, well, first of all, we don't like it because we like people. We want to be around people. We also feel like there's less, like, it's less personal, so we can build less rapport. It's harder to keep people engaged, especially if it's multiple people. So most salespeople don't like it, right? But this is the interesting thing about virtual selling. If you ask the customers what they prefer, they do like it. There's no, they don't have to travel, no travel time. They don't have to go and visit different service providers. They can do it from the comfort of their own home. They can, it's much easier to leave the conversation if it's, you know, someone's trying to pitch them. Because this hasn't changed, but nobody wants to be sold to. But as a buyer, it's a lot more difficult to navigate leaving a sales situation when you're already there physically, whereas there, when you're there remotely, it's like, yeah. You know, it's a little bit like, I had some problems with my internet. I changed internet service providers recently. And, you know, you're on the telephone with them and you think to yourself, this is my 30th phone call with these guys and they're asking me the same questions that they've asked me every other call. And, like, I'm so frustrated that you may have only spoken to this person that you're speaking to. Like, you don't mind having spoken to them before, but because of your, you just want to get your problem solved. You've got no interest in, like, I was like hanging up on people. I was doing things I would never do in person, right? Because I was so frustrated and I was running out of time, invested so much time in this. It was very frustrating. And I just wanted my problem solved. But I think about it, like, it's very similar to, like, it wouldn't be the same degree, but it's very similar in a B2B sales situation. Because when you're communicating with somebody over the telephone or even over webcam or Zoom, is there more of a connection or less of a connection? Is less of a connection. Is there more empathy for the person on the other side or less? There's less. It's like, that's why so many people are antisocial on Twitter that wouldn't be antisocial in real life, because there's less empathy. It's just an avatar, it's a person. And so they spew all that stuff. And so you've got to work harder. There's less connection, there's less empathy, less rapport. And if those situations are working against you, then you've also got to be mindful that you're going into that meeting with less empathy, less connection. So you've got to make more of an effort and bring your energy up to really bring that empathy forward so that you understand the customer's problem. You have to make more of an effort because it's quite easy to just go, oh, that guy was a wanker, he'll never buy after the call because you didn't have any empathy. Than it is to grow your business. And to be honest, like, if you catch yourself saying anything like that, I don't care whether it's true or not, call yourself out and always just think to yourself, well, if he wasn't a wanker, like, what could have I done differently? Because there's a lot of people out there and you might not realize you do it yourself. I do it myself as well. Whether or not I catch myself is a different story. But, like, when you see somebody doing something that's, like, to you it's impressive, right? Because, like, it doesn't matter why it's impressive. It could be something that, you know, you dreamt of doing when you were a kid and you just went in a different direction. Or it could be something absolutely remarkable, like going to Mars or, you know, making $10 million or whatever it may be. When you see somebody doing something remarkable like that, it's easier to go, yeah, but he's rich. Or, yeah, but her dad gave her that car. Or, yeah, but, you know, she's got loads of followers, right? Because then that automatically validates where you are and the fact that you didn't do it, right? But the reality is, in most cases, the dad did not buy the car. No one gave them. Look, they would have worked their ass off. That's probably what happened, is they worked their ass off. That's probably what happened. Not always, but more often than not, we're very quick to pass judgment on things. And it's possible, I can tell you right now, it's possible to crush it on virtual sales. I don't have all the answers, but I know that there's people that were performing pretty average at sales before the pandemic that are now killing it because they mastered virtual selling. So somebody is doing, like, going to 10 sales meetings, if they're in B2B, like, let's say they're looking for, someone's been tasked with hiring a consultant to help them with some sort of management change or something, and they've got to speak to 10 different service providers, and every meeting they go into, the guy's sitting there, and it's like, is my camera on? Can you hear me? And then, you know, and then one guy, like, you know, comes to the meeting and he's like, he's got like the digital, whiteboard thing. He's got a standing desk. These things I don't even do, by the way, but like I'm just using examples. He's got like props and stuff, and he's super energetic because he understands that he needs to bring more energy to the table because it's with a virtual experience. He allows people in the meeting to contribute. He brings in other people. Like, all of these things are not like necessarily in areas where I'm an expert in virtual selling, but I just want to hammer home the point that it's important to consider that it's not the same as sales. The same thing is true with lead generation on social media and marketing, right? Because the leads are different. Like, if you get a lead from radio, or you get leader, my internet provider cut out, that's so funny. If you get a lead from Google, you get a lead from a Facebook ad, if you get a lead from a newspaper, if you get a lead from a TV ad, it's a different lead to LinkedIn, and it's a different lead to social media, because social media is social, right? So this is where people are hanging out. So this is what I'm going to use the old school style of. This is what I call an upside down pyramid. It's basically a triangle, right? And so at the top of the triangle, you've got people that don't know who you are, don't need your service, just the public. There may be some people in there that need your service, but it's like, it's just like everybody, right? So like that, like at the top, everybody, right? So that's, and you want to connect like with people on LinkedIn that narrow it down a little bit so they like meet some criteria of your target market, right? So like if you're an accountant, maybe they're just a business owner, or maybe a financial officer. And so you kind of narrow down that public bit a little bit. But it doesn't mean you can start selling to them. It's too broad. So that, well, after they move from like knowing nothing, they go to awareness. You can't read my writing. I don't know why I'm showing you this. But it's the next stage down this upside down pyramid, right? Awareness. So they're aware, not necessarily of you, but they're aware of the problem. They're aware they've got a problem. They're like, do you know what? We need a new accountant, right? They're aware of the problem. At the awareness stage, they're going to be there's different pieces of content that is likely to influence them to move down this pyramid scenario. Different pieces of content than if they were, say, already at the purchase stage, right? So I've got everyone still. Is everyone still with me? Hello, Alistair. How are you? Can't stay long, but great to catch you, mate. Thanks for coming, dropping by. We got dudes from Iran here, LinkedIn users. Hello, legend. Thank you, Chris. This is hilarious. Guys, drop in the chat with your questions. I know you've got questions. We're talking about customer journey here, right? Customer journey. This is 90% of people on social media do this wrong because they assume that everybody's either needs, like has the problem they solve, but they can sell to anyone that they're connected to. Big mistake, especially on like Facebook and Instagram, where you go to your friends and stuff. Man, I'll be honest with you, my friends like do not like following me on social media, right? Because all the content I create is not for them, you know? They're like, mate, I don't know about these bloody videos you're doing. And I'm like, mate, you're not in the target market. Keep opinions to yourself. Whereas it, like, I want opinions for people who are target market, but Anyway, so after awareness, you've got consideration. So when like somebody knows that they've got a problem and they're looking for solutions, that's when they'll be weighing up X brand over Y brand. So at the awareness, like you don't actually talk about your company, right? You talk about the problem. If they feel like you understand their problem, then they're probably going to assume that you're the right person to be able to guide them towards a solution. So you could give them some tips. So like, let's say, for example, the borders opened, right, in November. Borders are opening in November. Everyone can fly anywhere they want. There's no more COVID situation. All of a sudden, you realize you haven't had a holiday in a while and you think, we should go on a holiday in December. Where should we go? Let's go somewhere new. Okay, so let's go to Thailand. We'll go to Thailand. Never been to Thailand before. How do we know what to pack? How do we know what the weather's like? We'll go on a Google and we like start searching like, oh, you know, what is there to do in Thailand? What temperature is it in Phuket at December? And you come across some content and it's like, these are the 10 things that you need to know if you go on a holiday in Phuket in December. And you're like, oh, this is handy. So honey, yeah, we need to bring this. We need to go there. Oh, we should do this canoeing trip. That sounds good, right? And then at the end of the article, it says, hey, by the way, have you got any accommodation? That article has moved you from awareness to consideration for their accommodation product. That's how content works in terms of capturing people at the awareness stage. On social media, like if you don't cater for the awareness stage, you kind of got to run ads. You've got to run ads for two reasons. One, because when you run ads, you're more likely to be able to narrow the audience down to people that are at the consideration stage. Okay? So that are interested in like a hotel, because these guys weren't interested in a hotel. They were just interested in like going to, you know, maybe going away. I hope that makes sense. Or the other reason that you can measure intent, but also you can make sure it gets in front of them as well, right? Because organically, and listen to me carefully here, like LinkedIn and Instagram are the best for organic, or YouTube as well, but LinkedIn and Instagram are social, YouTube's more of a search engine. But if you're going organic, you're always going to start, it's going to show it to a handful of the people at the top of the customer journey who are in the awareness stage. So in order for you to get engagement, that's like, you guys know how the algorithm works. You need to get a decent amount of engagement for more people to see it. So like, if nobody likes and comments your stuff when you post it, it doesn't, what it means is not many people saw it. So don't worry about posting the next thing differently the next day. It's not like it showed it to, if you got 1,000 connections, it didn't show it to 1,000 people and 1,000 people didn't like it. LinkedIn's like not going to show crap content to that many people. And as you can tell in the newsfeed, you can't look at everything. So it can't show everything at the top. So it'll show it to like 50 people, 40 people, depending on your like, you know, prior content and how engaged people are. If you get a few likes, a few comments, okay, well, we're confident to show it to more people, okay? And then if it gets like enough engagement, then it'll show it to your whole network, 1,000 people. And this is the interesting thing, is when it gets like particularly high engagement, a lot of people having conversations, a lot of people dwelling on the post, spending time on there, reading it, consuming it, saving it, coming back to it later, you're responding to comments, it can go viral. And it goes beyond your network to people that are interested in that topic, right? That's how the algorithm works. Now, you can imagine that if you create content that's for the consideration stage, you're only going to be able to get engagement from a smaller portion of the top of the funnel, right? And so you're making it very difficult for you to get enough engagement to go viral or to get maximum exposure. So all of your organic content must cater for the awareness stage of the customer journey. So if you see that you're posting and you're talking about your business, just be careful. Are you catering for the awareness stage? Okay, like talking about business and using yours as an example or whatever, like an inspirational post, is totally cool. Like that's going to relate to a lot of people. But if you're going, hey, look, we've got this new product that's launching on Friday and it gives you this, 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 and this, and we're going to give you 10% off, that's not going to get much engagement, right? From an organic post. Like it would be better as an ad. Okay. So here we go. We've got some comments coming through. Ladies and gentlemen. Who likes my drawing, by the way? You're upside down, Barahoons. What we used to call the sales funnel here. Yeah, well, this is, yeah, so I have a sales funnel and I have a marketing funnel, I guess you would call it. So this would be like my marketing funnel. What else do they call it? It's a funnel, basically. But this is just really to get a lead. And then a sales funnel, I look at it like, you know, you've got your inquiry or your leads, then you've got your prospects, then you've got your proposals and sort of move down. Yeah. But I mean, these days, a lot of what is happening on marketing, a lot of this stuff used to all happen face-to-face with sales. Like it used to just kind of be the salesperson would do that educating. Like they weren't really Googling online, finding the 10 things about this and the 10 things about that. My man, Shahid Aziz, thanks so much for joining us. Good to see you. How are you, Amber? Do I agree with Brooke? No, I don't. Let me read the rest. Do you agree with Brooke that the goal should be to get the clients off the platform into your sales funnel? Or do you feel this only applies to Instagram? Yes, I do agree. If your goal is to get sales, you want to get them off the platform. Absolutely. Now, one of the things that Brooke will do, I think one of the main differences between my business and Brooke's business, first of all, like extremely great at what she does, Brooke Vilinovich. She's the best in the business, certainly in Australia, in terms of Instagram coaching. And I said to her, like, when I joined the social club, I said, Brooke, why are your prices so like cheap? You put your prices up. It's worth more. Like, we're getting so much value. She's like, no, I don't want to do that. And so she's got like a volume of clients who she communicates with at scale. Whereas what I've done with my business is I've moved more towards the premium end of the market. I deal a lot with corporates. I don't need 800 clients. Like, I'm good if I've got like 30 clients. That's awesome. But those clients, because they're spending more, they need like a personalized approach. So yes, absolutely, I take them off the platform. I just don't always put them into like a lead magnet and an email funnel. I quite often just go straight to the phone call. Like I give them that level of service. Those are qualified. This is the thing, right? And this is why we say get off the platform, is you don't want to be going back and forth on LinkedIn or Instagram answering questions. Like if somebody says, oh yeah, like I'm interested in that. Like, oh, by the way, like what is a lead generation, for example, like should I use Sales Navigator, right? They send you that. Now, I am well experienced in whether or not to use Sales Navigator. I know exactly whether or not his business should be using Sales Navigator. I've got videos and tutorials on YouTube that I could send him that tell you exactly how to use Sales Navigator. I've probably got an ebook somewhere that tells him exactly how to use Sales Navigator. So it's like tempting to go, yeah, here you go. Look, bang, bang, bang. I'm going to give you all the value. That's not what you should do. If they start asking questions, and another question, by the way, just to put this in context, is, I'm so keen. I've seen your videos. Lead generation sounds awesome. How much is it? They get that all the time. Okay. Now, if you answer that question on LinkedIn, you've given permission for him to enter into a dialogue with back and forth messages. So that is a dialogue with a prospect that you have no control over. Okay. Now, if you want to give the prospect the best standard of service that you can, you need to control the conversation, the dialogue with the customer. It's really like a professional salesperson will always control the dialogue, and it's not controlling the customer's decision. It's controlling the information that they get, because if they get the price before they understand the value, then they're not going to buy from you, and it's going to be your fault. And so, like, it's really important. Sorry, I feel like I'm pointing at you. I'm not pointing. I'm just getting a bit excited here. That's what happens when I get a red wine in me. So this is why I'm drinking red wine, right? And I need you guys to help me with this. I want the next sponsor of Monday Night Live to be a wine company. And this is Vino Mofo, by the way, who didn't sponsor me. So they're getting a shout out today. Great company. All right. So don't lose control of the sales process. So if somebody says, what's the price or how do I use Sales Navigator? Great question. Great question. More than happy to answer all of your questions. Let's hop on a telephone call. When would suit you? Here's a link to my calendar, right? But you know, and I just want to throw this in there. And I know this is like irrelevant, like not really relevant to the question, but don't do like both of those things. So don't say when's the suits to speak. Here's a link to my calendar. Here's my email. Here's my website. There's too much. Like if you want this, if you want that, if you want this, I see that all the time, like from people trying to give all the options that we can do this, we can do that, we can do this, we can do this. Just keep control of the process. Just give them one next step, one next step. What would be the ideal next step if you were going to help them buy? Pick up the phone, give me a call. Thank you. That's perfect. People want clarity. Like I can give you a great example, by the way. I'm getting a website built at the moment. They're doing it's finished actually. They're doing a fantastic job. Fantastic job. It's a great website. But sometimes I could get a bit confused because I'm like, I'm not a web designer. And I say, hey, I went to the website and I noticed like, you know, this form opens this way. Shouldn't it be like, it makes sense that it goes that way? Or is that the way the template is? If I'm wrong, just let me know. And they'll say, so what you're saying is you want this form to go over here and you want like as if I'm the expert, like giving me all the options. And I don't really know. Like I just want them to say, no, Nathaniel, it's supposed to be like that. All good. And that's what you guys need to do with your customers. Tell them what to do next. Because as soon as you give them too many options, they're like, I don't know what the best thing to do is. You're the professional, so you help them with what the next step is. So here we go. Oh, hello. I try to do similar marketing on FB now, looking to learn off you. So Chris, I've got a question for you. You can let me know in the chat. Is organic reach dead on Facebook or is that a load of shit? Lorraine, good to see you. Lorraine's over here in Perth. I hope you've been wearing your mask this weekend. Is there a ratio to follow by way of how much content should target awareness? That's such a good question. Like the way I think about it is you can kind of tell by how active your account is in terms of engagement. Like at the moment, like my LinkedIn account is like just firing along. Like it's the amount of profile views, notifications is huge. Every post is going nuts. I could throw something in there that didn't have, I throw like links to meetups, I throw things in there that I know won't, like typically won't do that well, but I do okay because everything else is really like firing along. So always, if your numbers aren't up, always go for awareness. If you wanted a rule, I would say 80-20, like 4 and 5. Post should be for the awareness stage. And then the fifth one shouldn't like necessarily be like about like how to, you know, why they should choose you, but it's more like just like telling them what the next step would be to find out whether or not it would be. Let me give you an example. Okay, so, you know, I've finished LinkedIn Insider 2.0, like yay. I've got to start the email marketing soon. Like LinkedIn Insider has been around for a long time. It's a 12-module online training course, and it's awesome. Like, and it's still all relevant. The only issue with it is like 5 years old, four or five years old. I watch content. I'm like, that's irrelevant. But it is 4 or 5 years old. So when you look at LinkedIn, it looks different. Blah blah blah. There's things I can add to it and blah blah blah. So in the new website, NathanielBibby.com, I've completed LinkedIn Insider 2.0. So like I'm planning my content planning for it at the moment. And so a lot of the posts are for the awareness stage and they're educational. Like I've got snippets of content that teach people a little bit about LinkedIn. And then when I see people engaged, then I might private message them and offer them the course. But if I did like 4 of those and I did one where I actually wanted to talk about like, you know, buying the product, you know, I would do it in such a way that I would be like, okay, you know, 95% of people that use LinkedIn make 3 mistakes on their LinkedIn profile. Right? So first of all, everybody that's seeing it is on LinkedIn because that's where I'm posting it. So that's everyone. 95% of them are making three mistakes. So it caters for everyone. It's talking about the mistakes and the problems and things people do wrong, not the solution. That's really how you do it. And then I'm also building intrigue with that statement so that they want to read more. So they're like, well, I've told them that there's three mistakes that 95% are making. And they're thinking to themselves, well, if there's 95% of people making them and I'm not really getting the results I want, I could be part of that 95%. There's three mistakes. I wonder what they are. And so they keep reading. And then all you do is you just say, look, so the mistake number one is people upload a version of their resume. Like, I've never bought anything because somebody handed me a version of their resume. Have you? And then mistake number two is, do we give them mistake number two? We could not. Mistake number two, we could say, okay, people like start selling before they've, you know, established a need, for example, and you explain why that's a problem. For mistake number three, you may want to check out my new online training course, Linked Insider, where I go into all of the mistakes and all of the things that you should be doing. It's a 12-module training course. Drop a comment below if you'd like the link. The reason I always say drop a comment below if you'd like the link is because it gets more engagement, right? If you just put the link in the post, first of all, LinkedIn doesn't like you putting the link in the post. But even if you put a link in the comments, what's going to somebody going to do if they're interested? They're going to go, oh, yeah, cool. They might hit like if they're being friendly, but pretty much they're just going to click on the link and then they've left. They've left LinkedIn, they've left your content. So you don't get the added benefit of a comment or a like, engagement. They've left the platform. LinkedIn's not going to count that, you know, click on the link. And then obviously, like when they get to that landing page, there's a conversion rate once they arrive at that landing page. You know, not everybody is just going to pull their credit card out and buy straight away. They may come back later. You know, depends how good the landing page is, depends how well they know you. So webinars work really well. Getting people to opt into a webinar, getting people to download a lead magnet. Like Brooke talks about a lot about lead magnets. She kind of fires everything towards a lead magnet. And again, like I don't always do that because like a lead magnet is good. And if you're getting like 1,000 people see your post, if you know a post is going to do really well, drop yes below for, you know, your free ebook. Great strategy. You'll get like 200 people in your database and they'll go through the process. But I just know that if I speak to somebody, conversion rate's 1 in 5. If I put them in my email funnel, conversion rate's like 1 in 20. If I put them to a landing page, conversion rate might be 1 in 15. It just depends. But I got a pretty good idea of what the conversion rates are. So if I can see somebody's a good lead and they've engaged my content, I'm pretty much going straight to a call. Most of the time. Oh, you're so supportive, Lorraine. I appreciate that. I hope that was helpful. Jeremy, what's the maximum views in NZ normally? Good question. Not sure. Per post. Here we go. I've seen a maximum views. Well, there's no maximum. If you're in New Zealand, it doesn't mean that the rest of the world's not going to see the content as well. Richard Branson's the most followed person on LinkedIn. So let's go and check out what he's getting. Sales Navigator is useful. It's got a lot better. I like it because, you know, I've got a tendency to use LinkedIn a lot. And Sales Navigator allows you to use LinkedIn more. Like you can see more people in search results. This is where I really like it. It allows you to search by things like company size. I find that really valuable, company size. So if you're targeting businesses that, let's say you're targeting financial services firms, but you're like 10 grand a month, right? The chances of you being able to help somebody that's just got like two people working for them might be relatively low. You just got to ask yourself, right? Because you want to target people that are likely to have the money to pay for what you do, because you can't help everyone. But one of the people you can't help are people that can't pay for your services. And if you look at the categories, like solopreneur, then there's 1 to 10 employees, and then there's like 10 to 20 employees, 20 to 50, 50 to 100, 100 up, 1,000 up. You can eliminate like 80 or maybe 70% of financial services firms because they're too small or they're too big. If they're too big, like you might say, oh, yeah, it'd be great to have a client that's, you know, got 5,000 employees. But you've also got to consider, like, okay, well, how many decision makers are going to be in that process? Is the head office likely to be where I am? Is that sales process going to take a lot longer? So you want to kind of like find the balance between like who's going to be able to make a decision with the resources that they've got at hand and who's likely to be able to afford what you can do. And, you know, if they meet both those criteria, they should also be the same person as who you can add the most value to. So I think that's really valuable. And the leads list in Sales Navigator, like being able to save leads to a list is super cool, super cool. So like if I want to target like businesses in the aged care industry for like a month or whatever, a couple of months, see how it goes, like I can tag them in the lead list for aged care. So they all show up in a certain list and I can reach them all there. I can contact them. And this is the other cool thing that like most people don't know, like this is relatively new, is if you can, when you go to Sales Navigator, you can like go to a news feed that only shows the people that you've saved as leads. So you see all of their content, the people that you saved as leads. You probably wouldn't see it in your normal news feed because a lot of them probably don't get many likes. But the fact that you're engaging with the content, like if you like, if you're targeting CEOs of mining companies, this is one of the industries it works extremely well in because I've seen it work for a client. And you save them all as leads and you see them in their Sales Navigator news feed and you're like, you know, great post, mate. Like, oh, I like this. I'm, you know, sharing some insights. All those people are going to like start releasing dopamine every time they see your face because you like their shit and a lot of people don't. And it is great for rapport building. Like when you message them, they're like, oh, hey, man, Jeremy, I've been waiting to speak to you, mate. How are you? Da-da-da-da. Like, you know, if you're going to be using it, it's great. But like this is the mistake that a lot of businesses make, a lot of marketers make, and a lot of business owners make is they're like, oh, LinkedIn, don't know how to use that. Call LinkedIn or I'll go to LinkedIn's website or buy Sales Navigator. I've got Sales Navigator. Now where are the sales? Like it's not going to fix anything for you if you're not already using it to do business. So this is what I always suggest doing is get LinkedIn generating return on investment working for you and then upgrade to Sales Navigator because what you can learn on the basic LinkedIn is fundamental. Like you need to know that. Sales Navigator is going to be useless if you don't know how to connect with somebody and set an appointment and post content on the free version, you know, first. You ought to be able to do that. That's the skill you need. That, you know, Sales Navigator is not going to make people jump out of the computer screen, throw their credit cards on the floor and say, take my money. Agreed, salesperson is no longer the fountain of all knowledge. Google is the new sales engine, your marketing files. Yeah, beautiful. Budget, authority, needs, time scale. I love that. This is the thing with these lives is we get a few marketing experts on the on this session. So we can always help each other in the comments. You'll find a lot of knowledgeable people here tuning in. Lorraine, love that. Thanks. Drop a comment. Adds to engagement and brings in permission frame. Permission. Yes, yes, yes. I'm glad you said that. It's a lot easier to market to people who have given you permission to market to them. I'm a big believer in that. Even though like I'm, you know, jumping to a phone call, I'm always like, you know, I've got a few questions like, would you like to have a conversation? And then when they get on the phone, I'm like, you know, tell me more about your business. Okay, how do you think I can help? Or what are you struggling with at the moment? How does that feel? How's that impacting your bottom line? Would you like to know how I can help you with that? If they say yes, okay, well, there's two ways we can help you. We can do this way or that way. Which way would you prefer to hear about? Okay, I'd like to hear about that. Da-da-da. Would you like to know about how you can buy? Would you like to know about investment? Would you like a proposal? Would you like to buy? All questions. Isn't that, I don't think there's any selling in the traditional. How most people think about selling is like, I'm going to manipulate you and push you into buying something. Like, and if I was working in a car yard and I couldn't pay my rent, I'd probably do that too, you know. But consultative selling is how business is done these days. Like, yeah, the old school way of selling, like a lot of the guys that were crushing it in finance and stuff, they seem to be slowly just disappearing. By the way, there's this dude, right? This is hilarious. So there's this woman that's been working from home in the US, and she keeps having to hop on Zoom calls, and the husband's out of work, right? And so he keeps photobombing her Zoom calls and dressing up as different superheroes in the background. Have you guys seen this? Like dressing up as Batman and stuff, and just like sitting there on his laptop in the background and waits for someone to notice. Some people were getting quite creative with this whole like working remote thing. Like, we've got to remember in Australia as well, like this working remote thing is not going anywhere. Like I said, what I said before, the customers like it, which means it's not going to change. Well, I mean, you know, obviously you're going to have some more, like, you will get out more, but this style of buying is something that we need to understand. Otherwise, you won't be a top performer. If you can't sell virtually in this day and age in B2B, you're in a lot of trouble, you know. So there's a few trends I want to mention. There's five trends. Virtual selling, okay? I think it's here to stay. You know, I think that the assumption that we're going to go back to primarily face-to-face selling is not realistic. You heard it here. Nat Bibby says it's not realistic. Sorry, bro. Virtual's here to stay. So the goal of a virtual meeting is not necessarily on-the-spot sale, okay? It's to generally it's to get a second meeting. That way you can, you know, accumulate the information and come back with something to present, which is a bit more customized. For big ticket items, you know, there's always people that influence buying decisions. Even in B2C, somebody's married, there's an influencer, right? and so most people aren't ready to sign a contract at the first meeting, and I can't stand it. And I know you, like a lot of people feel the same. When you're really interested in a product or a service, but it's a lot of money, and you're just not ready to buy in the first meeting, and they're like, well, why aren't you buying? Why? Like, they're trying to close you. They're doing all those techniques, like, you know, what could make you buy today? And I'm like, man, I don't want to buy today. I'm not ready to buy in this first meeting. I need to consider it, think about it. A lot of people, especially us, like I'm an introvert, and I actually think about things when I'm on my own. Like I could be face to face with you and disagree with you, have a full on like debate, walk away 10 minutes later, call you up and go, oh, do you know what? You're right. Because I just thought about it, because I do my thinking when I'm on my own. So a lot of times people aren't ready to sign in the first meeting, but this is the tricky bit. This is where good sales comes into it. Then again, sometimes they are. So you've got to be agile and adapt to the client's pace. You've got to adapt to the client's pace. So we've learned over the past months that by selling remotely, we cannot effectively connect with buyers, but also be productive in our discussions with them and spend less time traveling. So buyers enjoy it. So it won't go back to the way it was. So video conferencing becomes important. I've got a few clients in this area. So this one thing hasn't changed. This is the thing. Constant communication with your customers is now vital. And so even if you're seeing them face-to-face, the virtual stuff kind of has to be in there. Like, you need to be constantly communicating with them while they're moving through that customer journey. Preferred method, video conference. That's what the stats say. Today's salespeople are running from Zoom call to Zoom call, and many of those calls can now be expected to feature multiple decision makers. So it's good to plan a call before you go on, if it's a big meeting, so that you can get everyone engaged and people aren't like, you know, there's always a couple with their cameras off and stuff, and it's awkward to get them to turn the camera on. If they can't turn the camera on, you've got to figure out a way to engage them. And it comes with practice, but you can also, you know, plan as well. I improved a lot in this area in the last year. If any of you fans of Tony Robbins, because Tony Robbins has taken virtual events to a whole nother level with 360-degree Zoom room. He's getting more people than ever to his events. In quite like 8-9 months, business would have been, you know, like his events business would have stopped. And now he's getting more. And do you know why people love it? This is why. Obviously, his content is fantastic, but let's put it aside. It's because it's so rare and unique. Like, this is with anything new comes along, when any new trend, like the first ones to like get ahead of the curve, just nail it. Like when Tony Robbins came out with the 360-degree room, where he's interacting with people at scale events, every other person running events was doing it like this, like sitting at a desk and, you know, showing slides and stuff. So It's a novelty, right? Like, because if you're going to 10 Zoom meetings and boring, and you go to one that's got music and interaction, and you can chat, you can engage in whichever way you want, it stands out. Tony Robbins, what a legend. He's the man. I did a poll on LinkedIn, and most people said virtual events and virtual meetings are shit. But if they were good, then, you know, they would prefer them to real life events. Trend number three, social selling. You know, I've been harping on about this for a long time, social selling, haven't I? You know, but I think that, you know, before I was kind of like, it's a, you know, it works, guys. You know, you should be on here. You're gaining competitive edge. Now I'm like, guys, you need to be on here now. Like, now it's crucial. It's really important. Social selling is prospecting now. Now there's no other prospecting. Like, what else are you going to do? You're going to stand out the front of your shop and hand out leaflets? No. Like, it's social media. The first 3 weeks of lockdown in Australia, social media usage went up by 30%. It's in 3 weeks. But it doesn't mean that everyone's just going up on social media to buy stuff, right? A lot of people are consuming their news there. A lot of people now are hanging out there. Like, they're hanging out there. What's going to happen is the power is just going to shift more and more and more to the consumer. And, like, they're just not going to want to be interrupted. They just want to see. Like, even with ads, like, if you can create an organic content that people want to see and then they expect to see and that you've got permission, it'll do well. And if you've got a shit piece of content that people don't want to see and it interrupts them, it won't do well. And sponsoring it's not going to make any difference. Like it'll be expensive to get in front of people. They won't engage with it. Whereas if you sponsor this post, it'll go bananas because it'll be amplified by all of the engagement, and your cost per impression will go down because Facebook or LinkedIn or whoever knows it's good quality content. Because at the end of the day, this is their goal. LinkedIn's goal, YouTube goal, Facebook's goal is all the same. The amount of time that somebody, they just want people to spend more time on their platform. That's it. They want more people to spend more time on their platform. That's why on YouTube, it's like length of videos. Like, if somebody clicks on your video, watches it for a long time, YouTube are going to rank you at the top because that's in line with their goal. LinkedIn is exactly the same thing. They're like, man, this content creator is getting people to like comment, engage, message, watch videos, spend time on the platform. We're going to show them at the top of the newsfeed because it's in line with our goal. You've got to, and so you got to think yourself, like, how do I keep people on LinkedIn longer? Because if you think like that, then you know, this is how you do really well. So, like, everyone says, like, oh, you need short videos because short videos, like, you know, capture attention, blah, 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 blah. Come on, like, you see where I'm going with this, right? Short videos might capture attention, right? Because everyone's saying, oh, you know, our attention span's less than a goldfish. It's true, but we are not goldfish, are we? So if you get our attention, what are you going to do with it? So long form video, if it's good and it's in, and people have a relationship with you and you're adding value and you know your audience that well and it's catered for the awareness stage, long, if you can nail long video, people watch it, that's awesome. It's fantastic. It's in line with what LinkedIn wants. What normally happens with videos is after 10 seconds, and this is, I've actually learned this is probably conservative. After 10 seconds, 50% of people that press play are gone, right? So, like, if this is a 10-minute video, how good are my drawings? After 10 seconds, you've lost half your audience, and after a minute, you've lost 80% of your audience. So I would spend 20% of my time thinking about how do I not lose that 50% or 80%, right? That's what I'd be thinking about for 20% of the time. The other 80% of the time, I'd be looking at the guys that actually watch the whole thing because they're actually my audience. They're actually my guys. They're my peeps. Most of you, I hope you guys have been tuning in for a while now. This is you guys. I care more about what you think. Like, I care at least 10 times more about what you guys think than somebody that came on and left 10 seconds later. I'm way more interested in what you guys think. Got a Scooby-Doo. Well, he's tuned in for a while. See you, Alistair. Thanks for joining us. Matthew Paris, is a business in freelance lead generation possible on LinkedIn? Yeah. So this is a business offering lead generation as a freelancer, or you're a freelance business and you want to generate? I mean, both are possible. B2B, I would imagine you are. Yeah, like B2B. So lead generation on LinkedIn is the biggest opportunity that I've seen in 25 years in marketing. Hands down, I reckon it'll be the biggest opportunity we see in our lifetime to go from like a nobody to an industry leader. Like, because it's so scalable. Like, if you first campaign I ever did was over a week. I contacted 10 surgeons. I got 6 responses, had 4 meetings, made 1 sale. 10 surgeons, right? 10 surgeons, 1 sale, $25,000, right? That system is scalable forever. Like, I mean, there's 706 million plus members on LinkedIn. I'm never going to run out of surgeons. I mean, obviously, I evolved and doing different things, more competition now, blah, 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 blah. But, like, if you look at it from a scalability perspective, where else can you do that? Like, where else? It's the biggest networking community for business in the world, in history, ever. But, like, what's the next biggest one? Like, you know, the social media sites that are coming up, like 100,000 in the business world, 100,000 or something. The ones that we're probably familiar with are like B&I, 30 people meeting for breakfast once a week, sharing referrals, giving one referral, 30 people, 706 million. As soon as I tapped into LinkedIn lead generation, I quit B&I. I was like, you guys are wasting your time. And a third of the members paid me to teach them how to use LinkedIn. And, you know, like, I think to myself, I can't believe people still do it, to be honest. Like, I get it. Like, it's fun to have breakfast and hang out. But, I mean, is it? You know what I mean? You could have breakfast and hang out with anyone. I hope that answers your question. I got a bit sidetracked there, didn't I? I need another wine. Hey, Randall, thanks for joining us, my friend. My friend, what is your take on building a freelance lead generation? How would you go about getting started? The first thing I would do, well, I mean, lead generation, like, you've got to be able to practice what you preach, right? So you've got to make sure that your product's good. You've got to be able to deliver and then use what you are offering to the market to generate. You're your first client. Generate leads for yourself the same way that you would generate leads for a client. Go to NathanielBibby.com, man, and buy LinkedIn Insider 2.0. It's the bee's knees, bro. I've got to do a bit more promotion about this coming up, so I haven't mentioned too much about it. But, hey, what I was thinking, and if you have any feedback, let me know in the comments. I was thinking about doing like a you guys probably hate this out of this, but like, on YouTube, right, when someone's promoting a book or whatever, they'll like do like a 4-hour live or like a 12-hour live. I was thinking about like on LinkedIn, the limit's 4 hours. I was thinking about doing a 4-hour live when I launched LinkedIn Insider 2.0 and doing like live LinkedIn training, maybe getting a classroom or something. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. But yeah, starting a freelance lead generation business, look, get your product right, optimize your profile, and then you want to go get some clients. The best way to do that, you can demonstrate results in your own business, yeah, sure, but like you want some good clients. Get good clients real quick and use them as examples. So you just you say, look, I'm starting out in my business. I've had some extremely good results in my own business. I want to get some case studies from businesses in your industry. So I'm offering a 50% deal. It's like, it's not going to be offered again. You know, you can get it now and literally offer them something that's like really good value. But you just say to them, look, you know, if I can get this result for you, will you write me a testimonial? You know, because it's so much more valuable to start a business. So to get that reputation and that track record is really important. So 80% of value needs to happen in first 20% of the viewing time. Not necessarily. Like Like, it's good to put the value at the front, don't get me wrong. But if you build intrigue and a curiosity, people will keep watching. To be honest with you, like, if 1,000 people tune in and I know, like, that 80% of them are not going to be my customers anyway, like, I am more interested in serving the 20% really well. You'll keep more people on the call if you build a bit of intrigue and curiosity. But, like, yeah, put the value, like, when I say put the value at the front, like, don't put all, like, I just mean don't put all of it at the front. Like, so if you like, okay, so this video, this live is about the three ways to generate leads. Oh, guys, welcome to the video. The three ways to generate leads on LinkedIn are content, direct messaging, and LinkedIn ads. Let's make a start, shall we? Like, all of a sudden, you've just given them the answer. They don't necessarily need to know more. That's like a really bad way to start a live or a webinar. So you normally talk about the problem first. You'd be like, okay, there's three ways to generate leads on LinkedIn. Now, here's the problem with LinkedIn is a lot of people are on there and, you know, they're not really following the system, they're not really following a strategy. It's easy to spend a lot of time in the newsfeed getting distracted. And I don't know about you, but I get distracted by people's content, and before I know it, half the day's gone and I feel like I'm going around in circles. Does anybody else feel like that? So kind of identifying the problem. And you go, so what I found is there's three ways that you can generate leads on LinkedIn. And, you know, that's what I want to share with you today. But before I do, and you may even talk more about the problem, is that you're building that intrigue all the time. That's how you make videos. People watch the whole video, you know. And you've got to have a balance. Like, you can't piss people off by not, like, you've got to give them drippets, but just don't give it to them all at once, because otherwise they won't want to know more. And by the way, this is why, like, on Instagram, for example, like, a lot of people probably don't understand this. Because businesses, like, if a good social media, if somebody's good on social media in business, goes like this and takes a selfie and goes, oh, here I am working, right? Here I am working, takes a selfie. And then a lot of people see that and go, oh, so yeah, taking a selfie, like, working is the answer. And so then they're down the beach, like, they're like, oh, yeah, hi, it's me. And I take a selfie. But those are two completely different posts. When somebody goes, hi, I'm working, it creates curiosity. It's like, well, what are you working on? What are you doing? And they may even ask that person, what are you working on? And it's so much easier for him to say, well, I'm working on my new LinkedIn Insider training program. You know, would you like to know more about that? Whereas it's just like me, self, like, there's no intrigue there. So, like, a lot of those time when you see content creators, like, what it seems like they're just doing, like, nothing. They're just posting something that's, like, random. Quite often it's to do with intrigue and curiosity. Hey, it's Paul. Good to see you, my friend. I've been thinking about you. How are you? Be nice, cool. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's just, I like it. I want to go back and visit. Like, I'd be honest with you. Like, I do like the social interaction. I miss it a lot. But I went to a BNI as a visitor about 6 months ago. It must be more than that. It must be a year ago. Because I haven't been to one in a while, and I was so excited, and the person presenting was a plumber. And he literally, like, held up props of, like, pipes and stuff. He's, like, passing them around, like, well, I'm 20 minutes. And I, you know what I'm like, I can't sit still. So I'm like, I was, like, falling asleep. It was early. I was like, I've got to get out of here, man. So sometimes really good. Like, there's always good members, don't get me wrong, and, like, people that, you know, you can relate to it, and they can become really powerful advocates of your brand, because at the end of the day, relationships are really important. So if you're not going to do BNI, you've got to take responsibility for cultivating those relationships offline elsewhere. I don't want to get confused. Like, I know, Paul, this is not I'm not talking directly to you here, but you just made me think of this. Just because LinkedIn marketing and Instagram, like, say we brought with Instagram marketing is, you know, so powerful, it doesn't mean that we're spending all day on LinkedIn or Instagram. It, actually, far from it. Like, you'd be amazed. I think people would be amazed how, for the amount of activity I do on LinkedIn, how much more time I spend speaking to people on the phone and face to face. Like, the relation, like, the if you're doing better at social media. If you're doing better at social media, you should really be spending less time. Like, so if you're doing better, you should be having more offline conversations. That's the metric, really. Like, if you're getting more likes, more followers, more comments, more messages, but less conversations, like, offline, that's concerning. That's a concerning thing. Because you've got to get your back of house right first. So we are bosses. Do social media. We're not just social media junkies looking for likes and follows. Got to get the back of house, the business side of it down packed, so you've got something to funnel people into. Nothing worse than an influencer that's getting all this attention and doesn't know what to do with it. You got to be able to put them through your funnel. Brooke's got a fantastic funnel on Instagram, like with the lead funnel and her email marketing and just constantly showing up. And she's got remarketing with the ads, like funneling people to buy from her, that she can, like, you know, just smash content and know that it's going to generate return on investment because you've got the funnel set up. You have, like, if that's not working for you, this is what I suggest you do is you literally throw this, put this thing in a drawer for 2 weeks, a week's probably enough, right? And get your business in order first, like get your back of that, like, because it's not, you know, we don't, I couldn't care less how many followers I have. I literally, the only reason you ever hear about me talking about it is because quite often the people I serve, my customers, care about it. And so to get their attention, I talk about it. But I couldn't care less how many followers I have. I'm here to grow a business. I want to grow a business. I want to start a family. I want to spend more time with them. I want to be able to help more people. I don't give a shit how many followers I have along the process. But it's just like, this is a powerful way to engage with people at scale. I'm getting a bit excited, aren't I? Guys, we've got over an hour. It was a good session today, given that it was a bit impromptu. Thanks so much for everybody that joined Monday Night Live and tuned in. It's great to see some regulars here. Paul, Lorraine, I always appreciate seeing the regular faces. We've got Alistair, who had to bail. Amber, great to see you again. NathanielBibby.com. You'll be hearing a lot about this moving forward. Like, the LinkedIn versus Instagram recordings are on there. Go buy those. Go buy those. I can't talk too much about the other stuff on there. You might see it up there, your social media bootcamp, LinkedIn Insider 2.0, the agency blueprint, which I definitely can't talk about. We've got some awesome products coming up. Super excited about it all. I got my award submissions in last week. I'm moving house this week. It's an awesome time to be alive. Coming out of lockdown at midnight, I've got Biggie on my T-shirt and all you lovely people spend time on your Monday evening to listen to me. So I appreciate it. But thank you very much. Have a great week in business. I wish you nothing but success and happiness. And I'll see you next week on Monday Night Live.